You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 111 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and on this episode, you're going to hear from live music producer Tom Jackson. I recently met up with Tom at the ECMA Music Conference up in Canada, where I witnessed his live performance makeover session. In that makeover session, Tom takes a band and helps them to drastically make improvements to their live performance, all while the audience watches the transformation. After the session ended, Tom and I sat down to talk, and this podcast is the recording of that discussion. Those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a long time may recall that Tom made an appearance on the podcast back in 2009. In fact, it was episode number 43 in January of 2009. It was an extremely popular episode that created a lot of discussion, so you may want to go back and give that one a listen if you haven't already. I expect that this episode will generate a lot of discussion as well, so be sure to leave a comment or call our listener line. The details on how to do that will be at the end of the show. I look forward to hearing all the comments and interaction on the topic. With that being said, let's get to my discussion with Tom Jackson. Hey, I'm sitting here with live music producer Tom Jackson. We're in my hotel room at Prince Edward Island, Canada, at the ECMA conference here. Tom, I had to go all the way to Canada just to see you in person again.
Unbelievable. Mind-boggling that we have to go to a convention. Where are we anyway?
We're on an island further east than I realized North America went. So, but anyway, I just witnessed one of your band makeovers, which is actually the first time I've seen it. I've worked with you as being one of the band members, but it was really cool to sit back as an audience member and watch the transformation, and not only the transformation that happens, but you and I were just talking as we were walking up here, how sometimes it's hard to even convey what you're, you know, to the band. Different individuals in the band take the information differently, and trying to get them all to see it as a group is kind of an interesting process.
It is. And that is the deal, is getting people on the same page, buying into the method, and then working it. You know, and in a short time, like we just had 90 minutes, we're just scratching the surface.
So last time we talked, you were on the podcast. I think it's been like a year and a half now, maybe 2 years. We talked a lot about just the idea of why performers need to focus in on their live show. And, you know, one thing that comes to mind is how you mentioned that, you know, people learn how to play guitar. They learn how to, you know, by going in the studio, learn how to record. But when they step on stage, usually they have no one's ever taught them anything, and they have no clue. They're just looking at what everyone else does. And I kind of want to see what things have you've been thinking about since then, and some thoughts you've had, and it's something that we need to discuss more on this podcast. So I'm glad to have you back.
It's good to be here. I think the reason people don't learn to perform, first of all, is fear of turning them into something goofy. We've all seen shows that are hokey. And they're planned, they're canned, or there's all this weird movement, dance, and which is fine for dance artists, but for 95% of the artists I work with, it's a mistake. I think that's one of the reasons people are afraid of this process. The other side of the coin is they don't know it. In fact, I just taught at Berklee College of Music in Boston. And, I mean, we're talking about one of the most prestigious music schools in the world. And their administrators admitted to me, we don't teach this stuff. And we're sending them out. I mean, they know theory. They know their bands are tight. They can sing well. They even understand music business, you know, all the programs. They got great recordings. But when they walk out on stage, they don't know what they're doing. And I have to admit it sort of boggles my mind. In fact, I was just at a convention. I think it was after all, they run together. I teach a lot. But a guy's known me for years. He goes, dude, I am just astounded that after 16 years of knowing you, you're still the only guy that I know that does this. Now, there's people that say they do what I do, and people listening to this will say, oh, no, no, I know what you do. It's a method that I've developed over the last 20 years. Now, are there certain elements that people have taught or learned and stuff? Yes. But this is actually a process and a way to learn how to perform, or at least be ready to go into the studio. You know, you don't learn your guitar in the studio. You learn all the stuff. And what a producer does in the studio is pulls out of you those magical things and gives you a different perspective. And hopefully a good producer also understands, to me, the best producers are guys that understand what people are thinking when they're driving down the road in their car, what they're going to respond to. Because ultimately, we want them to buy our product and help make a living doing this thing in some way. So a producer can understand why he's putting the chorus together, why he changes something, how to pull this out. That's a really cool thing that would appeal to the masses. It's not just the masses. Forget the masses. But it would appeal to people.
I was going to say, I liked how you framed that they... The producer knows what people are thinking. It's not just about making a record that sounds nice. It's making a record that's going to connect with people. And that's kind of what you're trying to do with the live show.
100%. You said it. Couldn't have said it better. Might have stealed that. But it's true. No, that's exactly it. So somewhere along the lines, X years ago, I started looking at the show from the audience's perspective. And the beautiful part about and I think the connection, you know, everyone has their own life experiences, but I played in a band that was like a cross between Yes and Tull in my day. So it was real musical, you know, so we were tight and then I had other experiences where we'd got on tour and we did 500 dates in another band and it was about the show and the combination. Of knowing what the musician is thinking, and then I got the experience of understanding what the audience is thinking. And my job, in fact, my job description I described today was I'm a marriage counselor. And what I mean by that is you've got a man and a woman. They love each other. They want to get along. That's why they got married in the first place. But there's a communication problem if it's not going right. And I say the same thing with an artist. You've written some great songs. It's recorded well. You got all the promo. You're online. All the stuff's happening. But the career's not growing that well, or it's not working live. Or it might work a little bit live, but you're not working live. To me, success live is where 90-some percent of the people just love you, not 10%, 20%. There's no momentum building out of that. You get 90% of the people, you build some momentum. But my point is, back to the marriage counselor. The musician on stage is one of the spouses, and the audience is the other spouse. And my job is to know what's going on with the spouse, what he's trying to communicate to his other the other spouse, the audience, and make that connection without changing who the person is. And that's really what we do, you know, at Tom Jackson Productions, as live music producers, we try to get inside the artist's head, inside their songs, and figure out how do we make this connection with the audience. And in the 20 years I've done this, sometimes it's verbal, sometimes it's visual, sometimes it's musical, sometimes it's who you are on stage. Who you are on stage is more important than what you do sometimes. So... yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
I was just talking to somebody who he's managing one of the bands that are here at the conference, and he was a little bit skeptical, and I told him, well, you should go see the session and see what he actually does, and afterwards he was pretty impressed. But his biggest hang up, which still a lot of people that listened to your previous episode of the podcast, a lot of the feedback was this, that they still didn't like the fact of being told, like, you're going to stand here at this point and stand there. They thought it felt, felt canned, not authentic, and that's, you know, what the manager was saying. But what I was trying to express, and you can expound on this, is that you're building a live vocabulary. And if you don't have things in that vocabulary, your natural inclination is just to stand behind the mic and do nothing, and that's not a good show. There's maybe a handful of people out there that are naturally just excellent performers, but most of us, it's like if you don't have that vocabulary, you're going to go to what feels natural, and what's natural is boring to the audience.
Exactly. No, in fact, in what these 96, this is the downside to these 90-minute sessions is I made some, for those of you, obviously you weren't there, you listen to this podcast, I have people go to certain places on stage at times because I only got 90 minutes, I put them to some place. But ultimately what I want them to do is learn the concept of pressure on the audience, the places on stage, how to move on stage, and you make it your own. In fact, when it's done right, the artist, just like a guitar player develops style, if you really become a good guitar player, you develop style. If you're a drummer, you develop style. You know, what snare sound you have, what tones you choose as a guitar player, your vocal style. You'll have a style visually too, but you've got to know, to be a guitar player, he's got to know those chords. So the first time the guitar player played those chords, somebody had to show them specifically how to hold his hand and put it a certain way. After a while, you know when to go to that chord because it's in the song. And so the idea is not to stilt you. The idea is to, if you understand the rules, like in baseball, stealing a base, everyone doesn't steal a base. You got to know the situation. There's a ton. In fact, there's more spontaneity in my method than any artist will have ever on stage. They don't see, because there's a difference between spontaneity and winging it. But if you don't know the rules, you don't know how to break, you don't know where to go. So you're right. You just do what you normally do comfortably. And at first, there's stuff you need to learn. You need to learn, for example, if you step on this side of the stage during a dramatic guitar, an awesome guitar solo, people respond to it more than if you stood where you normally did, which is behind your pedals. Now, I'm not going to tell you, if you understand the method, I'm not going to tell you every night go to that same place on stage. But if you understand the concept, you know there's three places on stage you can go to deliver that solo. It'll be effective. Now, in this class I just did, I made a guy go to one place. I didn't have time to teach them all the places to go on stage. But if you learn the techniques and the fundamentals, make them your own, and then you develop your own style out of it, how to deliver, now we're an artist. Mm-hmm. We're not just somebody following rules. And this isn't acting. This isn't theater. This isn't dance. In fact, in working with some of the major artists in the world, I got people calling me saying, because the record company sent them a dance instructor or a choreographer or so, and that's not what they want. They can sense once they get there, this isn't what I wanted to do. It doesn't feel, it's not right. But what I bring to the table is we find the moments inside the songs, crack them open, and then develop them. What should each song should look a little bit different, because each song is a little bit different. Here's an, I don't know if I said this on the last podcast or not, but here's a perfect example. If, let's say you're in your band and your band's playing tonight and you said to me, Tom, I know you're not a lighting guy, but there's no one to run lights and you know our material. So could you run lights for us? So I go back to the lighting board and I ask the guy to show me what, you know, and let's say there's three buttons. One button is moody. One button is rave, where it's crazy, and one button is just like, okay, nice and solid. Well, when you guys are up there doing this rockin' song, I'm not going to put on a moody light. No one in their right minds would. Or if you're doing a ballad, I wouldn't have lights going all over the place. So that's a concept. It's a concept that we instinctively know. We know, okay, this is moody. If I'm running the lights, we do this. But here's the dilemma. When it comes to being on stage, artist after artist after artist after artist, their songs don't sound the same. You know, there's all kinds of different tempos, lyric lines, tonal changes, you know, different speeds, just the whole deal. Some rock, some are sweet. Yet, at the end of the day, most of the songs, if you videotape that band, all the songs will sound the same, but they look the same. And the problem with that is 55% of communication is what the audience sees with their eyes. So if they see the same thing every song, I know this sounds ridiculous to some people listening to this, but it's just absolutely the truth. 55% of communication with the audience is with their eyes. So if they see the same thing all the time, after a while, they're going to start sounding the same to somebody who's not a fan, somebody who's not married to you, somebody who doesn't know the songs. So if I'm talking to people right now on CD Baby who have sold 2, 3, 4, 5 billion records, you know, we can get away with things we can't for those of you who have sold 100, 200, 3,000, 10,000, 40,000. No, you're still trying to develop a fan base. And a fan base isn't married to you. They don't know your material. Then you're going to have to do something different.
Well, I thought one thing that happened during the session that you just coached, the band, you were trying to have the lead singer, you know, just stand there and wait with some authority to start singing, to kind of set the stage a little there. They were a three-piece band, which in that case is a little more challenging because there's not extra people to be doing something on stage, and also challenging for the band's perspective because the lead singer instinctively wants to play that guitar and feels comfortable playing it and hiding behind the microphone. And you had made a comment afterwards that they didn't feel comfortable in their bodies and just developing that authority. What can artists do? I mean, how do you coach somebody through that to develop that authority? It's awkward for all of us, and it's something that to be successful on stage, I think, is pretty important.
I think it's massive. In fact, I'm going to answer that in a roundabout way, if it's okay. If I don't answer it, come back to it. There's four areas I work on. These four areas are, and this has taken time to develop this method. This is my method. First area is, it's like building a house. You build a house, first thing you need is a plan. You need, you know, if I'm going to design a house, I need to get a vision. You know, in my mind, the reason I'm designing a house in the first place is because I don't want it to be like everybody else's house, or I've lived in those houses and I want something that reflects my personality a bit more. So really what I'm looking for is I'm looking for an artist, a band, a soloist, I don't care what it is. They need to get a vision for their show. And I don't mean, vision. I'm talking about to get little tidbits of insight into how a song's going to affect somebody, how the audience is going to respond, what they want to do. So if I'm building a house, I know, you know, I've seen kitchens that are really closed in, and that's the way I like my kitchen. So I'll design a kitchen that's closed in. I have a kitchen that's, you know, in my somebody else's style would be, I want kitchens that's a certain way. So the point is, I get a vision for that house, and I start putting together a plan to build that house. I get with an architecture, in this case, a live music producer, and start honing that vision in to from the roof to the foundation, to the way in, to the landscaping, the whole deal. Well, the show needs to be the same thing. There has to be a plan. And the plan is in 10 minutes before the show, you write out a bunch of songs. So what we need to do is have a vision and a plan for the show. That's one thing I work on. And planning is, for some people listening to this, they're going to be like, I can't do that, dude. I got to be spontaneous. That's a bunch of crap. Now, let me say this. Spontaneity is awesome in the right place. And I write spontaneity into the shows. When we do put together a show, there are places that are obvious we will stretch out for spontaneity. And depending on the crowd that night, learning how to listen to your audience is important. You know how far you can take that spontaneity. You can... I mean, really, it just depends on where your audience is. The second thing I spend time on is who they are as people. And this is what this guy was struggling with today. You know, one of the things I talk about constantly is confidence, authority, charisma, and how to develop that. And you got to get past stage fright, self-consciousness. There's all these things that you got to pull out of people so that they're willing to go out there and be what an audience expects you to be on stage. Off stage is a different world, but on stage you're performing and they have expectations. I talk about this in the roles of a band. because there's different roles that people need to fill. And let's take the roles, for example. Again, some people might go, I don't need a role. I'm just original. Listen, as a front person, for example, there are expectations for, as a front man. For example, one of the things a good front man should do is be able to talk to an audience. Simple as that. It's almost like I use the example of a quarterback on a football team. He's the quarterback. Every NFL quarterback has a role, and that role is defined as a leader, is defined as, he passes the ball, he hands the ball. There's certain things that happen. But if you watch every NFL quarterback, they're all different. It's like a paradox. They have a role, but they're able to put their own style into it. Vince Young is completely different than Peyton Manning. Michael Vick, he runs. He's dangerous as a runner. Manning, the only thing he's dangerous running to is the bathroom. You know what I mean? I mean, he can barely run. But they're two totally different quarterbacks, but the role is still the same. Same thing with the front man. A great front man understands the role, fulfills the role, and expands the role, yet makes it his own. So in dealing with this guy today, he had a hard time. They're uncomfortable with their bodies, and a lot of people I'm talking to are. And that has to do with, I mean, my recommendation, and this has just dawned on us in the last couple months, and I'm not doing a pitch here, but I've got a DVD series, All Roads Lead to the Stage, and number 5 is intended for people to go watch and woodshed in their house, watch and woodshed in the rooms, watch and woodshed in a rehearsal room to get comfortable with your body. There are things to do, angles, placement on stage, how to walk and play your instrument at the same time. Those are things to be practiced, as goofy as that sounds. But once you got it, you got it. People think, oh man, I can walk across stage. You start having them walk across stage or skip across stage, depending on the kind of song it is, or run across stage, and people can't do it. Now, in fact, there was an event I was teaching at where I had the bass player. He's really uncomfortable himself. And I had the bass player I wanted him to come out in front of the audience, what we call put pressure on the audience. It was a long intro. And he was really uncomfortable walking. He looked really bad. That's all I can say. I want to use bad words. But, I mean, he just looked goofy, really goofy, coming out to the front, walking and playing. So I stopped him. I said, I'll tell you what, just walk out here. Don't play your instrument. Run out here. He ran. He walked. He looked perfect. I said, now play the part. Then he went into his goofy look. There's something that I had to send him home and rehearse it because playing and moving is not as easy as, I mean, we both play, we both move, but to connect the two is hard. So anyways, the third thing I work on is technical skills. Skills that can be woodshedded, can be worked on, just like when we learned to play our instrument. I sat and played scales. Once I started getting past the scales, I started thinking, I was a bass player. So at first I copied. I copied people, learned their songs. Then I started influenced. I started thinking, well, what would, Chris Squire do in this place? But then once it got past in place of influence, I started developing my own style, my own way of doing things, but I had to get the fundamentals in place first. You can't jump from not knowing how to move to be an original, comfortable with your body person. You've got to go through the fundamentals to get to that place. Now, some people will say, and I hear this all the time. In fact, I was on a panel at Berkeley just a few weeks ago, and one of the people, I hear this all the time, and I know there's people right here that are going to agree with it. Well, you just got to get out there and play as much as you can. And I like that, but I don't like that. The problem is we start developing bad habits. And I'm telling you, it is hard to break bad habits, like with these guys today. I've worked with some young, when I first started working, young people didn't like, you know, I didn't like the idea because it couldn't last with me for 8, 10, 12 hours of rehearsal. We could only get through 3, 4, 5 hours. But in working with young people, getting them young, I didn't have the bad habits. And I'm telling you, they really progressed as performers, and they started developing their own style after a little bit of time, versus when I'm working with others that are out there just playing all the time. And I love to play all the time, but you're learning bad things mm-hmm. along with the good things. So that is one thing I totally disagree with. And the other is videotape yourself. And I hear this all the time, videotape yourself and then watch it. Well, if you don't know what to fix, then videotaping yourself, all you're going to do is major in the minors. You're going to have people tell you, oh, look, you need to smile more. Oh, hold the microphone like this. You know, jam a little bit right there. They don't understand how to, you know, I'm driving down the road, my car breaks down. I know it's broken. I can look at it and go, yep, broken. And I know just enough about it to get me in trouble to try and fix it. What I really need to do is get someone who really knows how to fix that car to fix that car. So learning these things that I talk about or doing my workshops or on my DVDs is, to me, and this may sound arrogant, but it's part of the process of being successful in this coming year. In fact, we just did a class with Ariel Hyatt and myself, and I believe the future is high tech, high touch. It's being able to work your online community, develop relationships with people, both online and at your show. So let me finish the last part of my method. First one is the planning, getting the vision. The second is who you are. How do you become confident, authority, willing to take risks, interesting to watch. The third is the techniques of performance. And then the fourth is creating these moments and being able to bring your character into your show. One of the biggest mistakes, which I just worked with these artists, and this is really, 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 really common, is we play the songs the way we record them, and it's a mistake. I mean, unless you're, you know, naming an artist that's just Beyonce, you know, Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift, and you've got fans that know every word of every song, I rearrange the songs. And here's the funny part. Even with those artists, I'll still rearrange songs. Some of them, I got to know which ones to keep the same, the biggest hit or the biggest hits, because everyone's singing along and throws them for a loop. But the people I'm talking to now on this thing, they probably don't have a million fans. So you've got so you're recording songs that'll go on the radio, trying to get on the radio, or in the back of your mind, you're hoping maybe this could get on the radio. So you're following the rules of songwriting, intro verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, 3.5 minutes. And then, which is totally fine. If you want to get played on the radio, those are some of the rules. Now, there are other rules, and you can break the rules if you understand the rules. Sting is a perfect example that he gets played on radio, he breaks the rules, but he knows why he's breaking the rule. But there are rules. So we follow the rules of songwriting to get on the radio. And here's the deal for those of you listening. If you don't want to get on the radio, you don't have to. You don't have to follow the rules of songwriting to get on the radio. You can write 45-minute songs if you want, 12-minute pieces, have 9 verses, no bridges. You know, that's your creative, you know, will. You can do whatever you want. But if you want to get played on the radio, they're kind of just some rules to follow. Well, what most people don't understand is there are rules from the stage. There are nonverbal signals we send consistently that either help us connect with our audience or not. Back to this school, Berkeley, since it's just so fresh in my mind, I was sitting on a dinner with one of the administrators, and she told me about a study that was just conducted. And they brought in all these people in this certain demographic for this band that came in, and they did multiple shows. And the band was a good band, good material, played you know, just they just played their stuff, and there it was, and they stood in the typical places, you know, the normal place. Every song looked the same, basically. And they finished, and then they took a survey after survey of these people coming in, and only 10% of the people said they even liked them. 10%. 90% of the people did not like them. They were boring, didn't like their music, you know, whatever. They took that same band and worked 2 weeks on some visual stuff. They rearranged the songs, worked on speaking to an audience, verbal skills, and 90% of the people wanted to get on their email list. They loved them. They wanted to buy their product. Now, listen, I had no idea this study or anything, but this is exactly what I'm talking about. The band didn't change. It was the same band. It was the same material. It was the same people. They just understood the rules of the stage. Someone helped them through making that emotion. This goes back to the very beginning of this thing. The emotional connection, the marriage counselor, making that connection. The people want to like them. When they go to a club, they go wanting to like them. They don't go out to have a bad time. Hey, I'm in a really crappy mood. Let's go out tonight. No. People want to go out and have a good time. They want to be entertained. They want to be captured, engaged. They want to experience moments. Most bands, most artists, most people listening to this do not understand those rules, and it breaks my heart.
Well, I think one thing to kind of illustrate what you're saying there, the band, like we said that you were just working with, was a three-piece, kind of a power pop rock band, I'll say, for lack of a better term, and very catchy songs, very good songs, and they played two songs. It was just kind of in your face from beginning to end, and I had never heard of the band before, and as a listener, it was kind of like there was no break for you to really kind of grasp on each nugget of the song. Having never heard the songs before, I knew that by the end of the song, I was like, okay, there were some interesting things in there, but they didn't really highlight it. And then one of the things that you pulled out of it was, you know, that the bridge was this really hooky thing. And so you had just the guitar player who was, you know, the front man, just start with that melody, singing the bridge, and then the whole band came in, and then it cut to just the bass and drums, and it really developed the song more. So as a listener, the parts were emphasized more, and I could grasp onto them. Having never heard them before, I would have definitely, you know, gone and bought the product, having seen the second version, and everyone in the audience was cheering, too, after really kind of seeing the transformation and being able to, you know, enjoy the music that was there even better and understand what was happening.
Yeah, well, that is the deal. You know, I have this saying that music comes at an audience like goulash. And goulash to me, it was when my mom or my wife would make, you know, leftovers. She'd throw rice or pasta and some meat and some vegetables, and I'd be eating it. It'd be pretty good, like the band today, the first. Oh, they're pretty good. But I didn't know what I was eating. It was kind of like, you know. So what I did was try to make it a fine meal so that people can follow it. See, what most people don't understand is that audiences are ignorant. And this goes back to this whole thing of me being a musician and me understanding the audience. Audiences don't know what to pay attention to. What we need to do is direct their attention by rearranging the song live so that they can see these nuggets, these moments inside the song that we as artists know are there. I mean, are you kidding? When I was in the studio, I mean, I heard the melody on the verse 100 times because we went back and did it again and did it. So do I know every little shaker and every little thing that's on the recording? You bet. How many people in the audience know? None. Very, very little. So what we've got to do is direct their attention to things that are important within the song. And sometimes that is lyric. Sometimes that is melody. Sometimes that's rhythm. Sometimes that's harmonies. I mean, sometimes it's verbal. And we have to direct their attention so that they can follow us. I'm not changing the melody. But by rearranging the song, we allow them into the song almost and part of the process. And they can follow along then. And then when they hear, oh my gosh, that melody, that's awesome. And they would never have heard it before because it just comes at them like goulash. They didn't know there was a great melody there. I sound like Rush Limbaugh. had to point it out to them, to point it out to the people. And then when the melody came out, you could just see people's eyes go, that is a cool melody. Wow, it was memorable. And the band sort of confused looks on their face in some ways because they're like, well, duh. What do you mean? That melody's always been there. They didn't realize that the audience didn't know that melody was there. Now, I mentioned pointing out the lyrics, pointing out the melody, pointing out. For some of you listening to this, you're thinking, well, I'm a songwriter, dude. It's all about the lyrics. Well, that's a problem. Well, now what I mean by that is this. I'm all about storytelling and songwriting and all that. But if every song is rich, rich lyrical content, it's a Chinese water torture. You're going to burn me out. To go on the other hand, if everything is fast guitars, just pounding away the whole time, it's a Chinese water torture. You're doing exactly the same thing. The audience is being assaulted by either words or by sounds or by something. And so we as creative people need to put it in a way that an audience can understand it. So if we take their attention away, even if we don't, are not a great vocalist, for example, singer-songwriter, if we take their attention away and put it on a melody just three or four times during the night and show them this cool little melody, even if our voice isn't amazing, then when we come back to the lyrics, it means more. I use the analogy of a dinner. In fact, I had dinner last night. I had a great steak here. And I'm eating this steak, and after about five or six bites, what do? I go to the salad. I go to the bread. I want something different. I don't care how strong your lyrics are. If you play me 10 songs where I have to pay attention to the lyrics the whole time, you're going to burn me out. But if I can go to lyrics, I can go to melody, I can go to some cool little rhythmic stuff, even singer-songwriters, you've got, you know, your instrument you could use as percussion. If I go to no music at all, the spoken word, and then you can flip-flop this to bands that play fast guitar and it's all about guitar. No, we've got to tune them into a lyric. We've got to tune them in. We've got to break it down so that it's quiet enough so people can actually hear the lyric, even though it may not be the main point of the band or the main course of the band.
Well, when you were saying that, it kind of made me think about that the average artist is probably approaching their show as if everybody is a super fan in the audience, as far as like playing, just like, you're going to love this because this is what we are. Not really kind of, when the average band is probably playing to mostly people that don't know their music, and instead of building momentum, like you mentioned earlier, they may be collecting a few fans along the way, but their show is not drawing people in such that they can become a super fan and go buy the music. I mean, this, you know, the average artist is going to be performing. Yeah. And to get fans, and that's going to be their biggest crowd that they're going to, you know, as far as like having people all at once hear their music, because the average artist is not getting on radio. And so to ignore that and not really see it from their perspective is just kind of unfortunate that that's kind of where most people are.
It is. Here's the dilemma. And I tell this story. I'm writing a book, and I'm about three quarters of the way through. And one of the chapters, I don't know if I'm going to title it this or not, but this happened. I'm in Nashville. And Franklin, which is south of Nashville, there's a Starbucks, and it's the busiest Starbucks in the Southeast, I'm told. I mean, it's like a convention every time you go in there. I mean, literally, there's just, you know, it's just crammed with people. I could sit there for a couple days and fill up my calendar because everyone just comes through Starbucks, right? So I'm standing in line, and I'm talking. I'm probably about 10 deep, and I hear this guy in front of me talking to another guy, and he's telling me, and I heard him overheard that his band name, and his record was being released 3, 4, 5 days, and you know, and he's like, dude, it's awesome, the record company's behind it, it's gonna rock, Yeah, yeah. I mean, and, you know, he was excited, which is normal. You've experienced that. Yeah. And so he finished his conversation with the guy in front of him, and I kind of poked him and said, hey, I heard your conversation. I'm Tom. I've been talking to your manager and record company about working with you on your show. There was a silence. He folded his arms. He backed up a step. I said, dude, what are you talking about? Our show rocks. Now, and listen, this is so, so normal. Here's the problem. People ask me this all the time. What is the number one problem? Well, this might be number one. If it's not, it's top five. You are inside your own body. You are playing your song. People are looking at you. Your adrenaline is moving. You're standing on stage. You know all these cool little parts going on in the song. So when you're performing and doing this, it is sweet. The problem isn't you. The problem is, does the audience get those things that are sweet? Do they make that connection? And in most cases, because audiences are not musical, they're ignorant, they do not make that connection. And not only that, they don't know your music like you're saying. So it goes by so quickly in the night that they can think, they miss most of the stuff. So what I do is rearrange the songs so they don't miss the stuff. They don't miss the important things, this cool lyric, this cool melody, this drum thing, which we've extended into a 5-minute percussion thing that everyone just loves to death. Remember the group when I put the, did you ever see the show where I put the bagpipe, sitar, and African drums together? In one song. And it was all stuff inside the song, and I just developed it. And no one was going, it was a 13-minute song, and people weren't going, oh, this is too long. They're going, oh. No. And the merch flew off the table. In fact, the band had this develop merch, little drums that people would take home that were autographed because it was such a moment in the show for people. And we pointed out those cool things that were going on in the show. But the problem, and I'm speaking to you folks listening to this, is that you know you're unique. You know that your music is good. You know this is a poignant lyric. You know the emotion that goes behind when you wrote that song about whether it was a great thing or a love story or your relationship with or, you know, whatever. You know those. The problem is people don't. And just going out and playing them, the way you've got them recorded is not going to work. It hasn't worked. It's not going to work. Now, sorry, let me back up. It has worked. There have been those nights when the planets align, the spirit falls, the monitors are awesome, and it's a love fest in the room. So I give you that. It has happened. Here's the problem. You don't know why it happened. You don't know why it happened. Here we go. I've spent 20 years learning out why how to make that happen because it can't be a random thing. I mean, it can be, but I'll tell you, anyone that can do that is not professional. That's an amateur, somebody who's got some ability, but is not consistent. Tony Gwynn, I'm a sports fan. The big difference between Tony Gwynn said the big difference between a professional and somebody in the minor leagues is consistency. And that's the deal. You want to be a professional musician. You want to be a professional on stage. There are things to learn, and that's your choice. And it is not goofy crap. Now, let me say this. Doesn't mean that you're not going to be uncomfortable working on it, but I can guarantee you this, guitar players, when you first sat down to play the guitar the very first time and you tried to play that chord and you did it over and over again, it wasn't natural. It was uncomfortable. In fact, it hurt my hands. But after a while, after your muscle memory kicked in, after wood shedding, you started getting comfortable with it. And after comfort came style. You started thinking, you weren't even thinking when you first started playing tones. You weren't thinking tones. It sounded like crap. But after you started mastering it, you started thinking, wow, I like the sound of that guitar. And then you started experimenting with stuff. And now your style is coming up. But again, you got to start with the fundamentals.
you know, from my own experience having worked with you, it was so amazing just to see that we had this 25-minute set that, you know, we had this, we were the opening slot on this major tour, and the record company brought you in to work with us, and it was very uncomfortable for us. We were like, what do we need this for? And it was amazing. And the thing that was interesting is that, you know, we had 25 minutes, and, you know, when you're the opening band, you got to make it count because people are still coming in. You know, it's if you don't grab their attention, they're like, oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm going to go check out the merch, do whatever, because this is just the opening band. But it made a huge difference, and it made the tour for us. Otherwise, it might not have been as effective as it was. But it went, and they, in fact, they started giving us longer opening sets because it was going so well, and the audience was anticipating seeing us. But it is uncomfortable, and it's a process that you just, as the live show becomes even more and more important, as, you know, things like radio just aren't there to support artists, you got to have not only be good, but you got to be building momentum with your live show. Do you have any final words to send us off on and with the rest of the podcast?
Well, here's what I want you to think about. If you're going to go in and do, I mean, if you're really going to go and do a record, did you guys have a producer?
Yes.
So you went in, you had the songs, and the producer, see, he helped you make it better. He knew what the audience was thinking sitting out there. That's all I do. That's all we do at Tom Jackson Productions. We do it, but we do it from the perspective of live, where, you know, it's frustrating to me. And you know this well enough. It's not frustrating because I don't have enough work. I have more work than I have any idea in the world what to do with. But it's frustrating in the sense that so many people are skeptical of this. It drives me berserk. But just look at it like a producer who helps an artist in the studio. And if you want a great, great record, you need a producer. I don't care who you are. And it's the same thing with the show. But here's where the frustration is. And this is where people, you need to start thinking about spending more time, energy, and money on this process instead of just the studio. It's so much easier to spend, I'll just say, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, does not matter the money, in the studio, because at the end of the process, you end up with 1,000 CDs. You get this thing right in your hand, and it's a picture of you, and it's your music, and it looks cool, and it gives you validation, and that's why so many people go in and record, because they keep doing it. We used to have a saying about vanity projects. People just do it for themselves. The problem with what we do is we don't have a product. We have a product. The product is the show, but it's this floating thing. It's not, you know, you can't take the show. Now, let me say this. If I had a great show, I would videotape it and sell it. There's your product right there. But it is. It's not like this final thing. You don't get a widget at the end of it. But I'll tell you this, when you work on it, and this is crass, but we're talking to people who are trying to make a living doing this, some of you. I mean, we don't deliver the widgets, but I'll tell you this, your live show will sell the widgets. I had one artist who sells, well, forget one artist. Just in the last week, I've had three artists tell me they're an indie artist. They used to sell 6 CDs a night. They are now averaging, and they spent 2 days with my assistant. They are now averaging 60 CD sales a night. Now, that's not millions or anything. Now, I did have one artist that literally I made $8 million, a manager told me, on one tour because of the moments we created in the show. This is an investment that will pay back, where your CD, it's, you know, how many of you I'm talking to right now have got hundreds of multiple projects sitting around. I'm telling you right now, this is not BS. This is not a sales pitch. I don't need your work. I don't need your sale. I don't need anything. I want to help you. I love working with artists. So I want you to start thinking about, I'll close what I started with, Bill Gates. The person who's going to be successful in the 21st century will have two things together. High tech, which is partly CD Baby, which we're talking about right here. Your website, that whole world of digital world. Here's the good news. You now no longer have to go through the gatekeepers. That's the good news. The bad news is everybody's doing it. So how do you make yourself exceptional, raise above everybody else? Well, the other part he says is high touch. High touch is me. High touch is you standing on stage and being in the room with people, and it changes the way they think. It moves them to buy their product and go online and start telling people about you. That's what it does. And I'm telling you right now, I don't care who I'm talking to. I don't care if I'm talking to Springsteen right now. You can get better. And you can make this work. But just by going out on stage and winging it, you will always remain an amateur. And I'm being harsh here, but the reason I am is because this stuff is important, and you don't even realize, a lot of you, that it is important. If you understand the rules, you work this process. I have never seen it work. I've had literally thousands of people that have either bought the products or worked with us or come to our boot camps or whatever. Thousands that every one of them says their sales have gone up noticeably. They're getting bookings. Some have got record deals, getting them prepared for showcases. But you've got to pay attention to this stuff, because just like you got to pay attention to your online thing, this can be creative. This should be creative. This should be fun. And it should be just a part of your journey as an artist. And I want to encourage you to find out more about it. And I will say this in the end, and you can wrap this up, Kevin, but I don't know anybody else that teaches this. Now, people say that they do, but I've gone to these other people. I've gone into the rehearsals, and they don't. They major in the minors, or they're choreographers, or they're dance people, that's not what this is, and you know that. If I could send you somewhere, like go to www.bitchinperformer on stage, and the person knew what they were talking about and was helpful for the singer-songwriter, for the jazz artist, for the rock band, for the pop band, and you could, those concepts would apply, I would do it, because I want you to be better and I have plenty of business. But I don't know any other place. So onstagesuccess.com. OnStageSuccess.com. Sign up for our email. I do an email every Tuesday. It's a blog. And there you go. I want to see you guys out there.
All right. Well, thanks, Tom, for hanging out. And it was, I hope everyone does sign up on your email list. It is really important. And it's something that's, you know, it's always an ongoing challenge, even as you advance your career. You know, I worked with you when I was in Small Town Poets years ago, but project after project, it's that same challenge. You need to refresh. It's a new group of people. You got to get on the same page, and it's a lot of work, but it's something that really pays off if you actually do the work. So we appreciate you taking time, and like you mentioned, check out Tom's stuff at onstagesuccess.com, and I guess, Tom, it's time to go hang out more in Prince Edward Island.
Yippee!
All right. Thanks, Tom. That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Thanks again for Tom for taking time out of his busy schedule at the ECMA conference to chat and be on the podcast again. Like I've said at the top of the show, I'd love to hear your feedback and comments and thoughts on the whole topic of live performance. There's several ways you can weigh in. You can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. Our favorite way for you to contact us is through our listener line at 206-426-5683. If you call the listener line, keep your comments, try to keep it under 2 minutes. That enables us to get more of them on the podcast and air what you have to say. And you can also leave comments in the comment section at the podcast blog at cdbabypodcast.com. So yeah, love to hear your comments and thoughts on this one. It's always a good discussion around live performance and how you should go about creating a great live show. So I look forward to that. Also, Tom has lots of resources and videos that if you want to learn more, you should definitely check out. I have some myself, and they are great resources. I'll put a link to that in the podcast show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. And he even has a little special discount for CD Baby artists, so check it out. All right, that's going to do it. We'll catch you next time. Bye. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.